So the first question is, what does slot mean to you?
I think it means process rather than product. It seems to me that that process lies, for me, that's a definition that places slot at the real crossroads of the most the forms of cultural practice that social practice that most interests me personally, because I think it's the domain where the most advanced cultural work that I see around me is taking place. So it's process because it's committed to a kind of iterative model of how culture happens and how knowledge is produced, but within that iterative space is also a kind of capaciousness for different kinds of modes of participation, a kind of multiplied model of how things get authored. And that's the kind of experimental space that that interests me also as an interested observer, I would say, because I've been involved in various projects that I see as having convergent aims with what slot does.
So how do you see the relationship between the physical space of Slot and Philly, which you've been part of in various mm-hmm. ways, the digital space of slot.org that you also know well, and the numerous initiatives that we undertake in the world at large? How do we make evident the and represent this interconnectedness within our graphic identity, but also online conceptually?
Yeah, I think that's a very complex question. In part because I think that the affordances of each of those three different models of activity can be significantly different, I think in some sort of ultimate sense the digital face of Slot is the most public facade, paradoxically, and the physical face, whether it's in the internal space here or activities out in the world, is a more kind of intermediate nature kind of space, both private and public at the same time, or operates within a smaller set of circles just by definition. Should all of those realms be interconnected in their graphic identity? There are obviously some real functional advantages for them to have some level of interconnection. It's hard to imagine a complete disconnection. On the other hand, could they have a kind of plurality in that their graphic identity stages, even as it tries to weave elements of continuity? I think that might be an interesting hypothesis for how I would imagine a graphic solution, one that tries to not create a singular identity, but tries to build a series of continuous threads out of a multiplicity.
And this builds upon that very question that you just spoke to, but should an experimental institution of which we would want to identify Slot as an example of, should it have a fixed graphic and online identity? How do we translate a fluid identity and a fluid process and a fluid practice across multiple projects, voices, cultures?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are really rich questions. I think the notion of a fixed graphic identity in the sort of era of the World Wide Web is almost a little bit of an oxymoron, given the fact that graphics can be animations and animations graphics. Therefore, even the most stable categories of marking, like logos, don't need to just be singular. They can contain within them multiple sorts of expressions of an identity. I guess I would tend to think in the case of an experimental institution like Slot, the notion of communicating a plural identity is not one I would shun, but I think plurality and bad design don't necessarily, they're not equivalent, certainly. So a lot of hard design work is and hard thinking is involved in trying to reconcile the pull towards a kind of cacophonous plurality and a kind of cohesive plurality. But I would be inclined to explore the notion of a plural identity almost just by my own predispositions and also my own sense of the kind of work that Slaut has done.
Maybe this is a question that most directly engages, or I imagine it most directly engaging the work that I understand you to do. But how should our archive, on a taxonomic level, let's say, on a philosophical level, how should that archive be made relevant and contemporary to a variety of audiences? Mm-hmm. How can we enter and conceive of the archive as at once indexable, navigable, yet fundamentally heterogeneous?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think archives in my mind are one of the most exciting, odd as it may seem, one of the most exciting kind of horizons for sort of reinventing and reshaping our relationship between present practice and the past. And I think that reinvention process is really hinging on exploiting one of the core affordances of digital artifacts, which is that they can quite literally have multiple lives. And I think that the notion of creating a kind of documentary trail where projects that might otherwise leave a maybe rather intangible trail are present and can be experienced as a chronological sequence is still an absolutely worthwhile endeavor. But limiting oneself to such a concept of the archive also, of course, involves incurring certain costs. And some of those costs are opportunity costs, the opportunity for work from the past to constantly be reinvented and remixed and reworked in the present. So in my view, the kind of archival strategy that would make sense is that not coincidentally happens to be the kinds of archives I'm myself engaged in designing, because I believe in this, so I practice what I preach, are archives that are really user-centered rather than object-centered or project-centered, where that kind of historical documentary role is not sacrificed to the notion of creating a place where people do things, where they do things with these objects from the past.
And then perhaps our last question. On our website, how can we cultivate this idea of an imaginative public? How can we think imaginatively about models for public conversation in a way that encourages meaningful engagement? I say this knowing that the web is often understood as like something that you engage very quickly, almost in a consumer-driven framework. So like, in what way do you think that, and again, maybe your work is emblematic of this, but how would you encourage us to think in enacting what we try to perform in real space,
which is
imaginative kind of constructions or mm-hmm. facilitation of critical and creative publics?
Yeah, I mean, I think the participatory potential of the web far exceeds its actual practice all the time. I see examples of even really well-intended and well-designed practice that doesn't translate into like really substantive forms of engagement on the part of audience members or distant observers, shall we say, of an institution, at least in the physical sense. So I think I think really thinking about how you activate those participant communities is really a challenge.
Does the website need to perform that?
I don't think a website can perform it, to be honest. I think a website can create openings for such a role. And it can send signals. One of the ways I think websites send signals is if actual programming becomes web-based, web-centric, that tells people that, in a sense, the core identity of your institution, like the core theater, if you like, is the web, that it isn't just a support somehow, which is, of course, a kind of legacy of print culture that I think we still have, that somehow we think of websites as playing a supporting role rather than being the true public place. Mm-hmm. There are also other ways of, because a website can only send signals and only model programming that's web-specific, there are ways of engaging, like formalizing the process of engagement. Like I like the notion of user-centered websites that are places for teaching, for instance, or research, where you can see, in a sense, again, this more process-based model that allows people to kind of see the dirty linen, see the laboratory, the workshop where things are being made imperfectly, the errors, the exclusions, And that creates a more porous space almost by definition. And if you add to that framework elements like the classroom, more structured environments that you invite into the website in a sense to do things with your website, I think the probability that you create a participant community expands.
And so what would that mean in the context of like Slot or the context of like the John Cage How to Get Started Party? What would messiness entail?
Well, I think it can entail a lot of different things. Right. But, I mean, one of the things it can entail, I think recuration as an opening is an interesting opening. In other words, where you show the choices that were made to create an event, and you also show what was left out, and you invite people, maybe sometimes even formalizing that invitation by bringing it into a classroom where you know that you have a sort of captive audience who can use this as a learning occasion for like about what curation means, like why choices matter. That can be one such contest context for kind of scripting a certain kind of participation. I think also there's, when you're dealing with contemporary forms of cultural practice, there's also a lot of expert knowledge out there. People who were not involved in events that can sometimes be leveraged. You can engage people in annotating or commenting or extending somehow, accompanying events that they may not, for one reason or another, have been involved in. And that's a kind of, I think the interesting, in my mind, the interesting kind of cognitive and cultural question around web culture is the before, during, and after. Like, it's the before and the after almost that become as interesting as the during, which would be the more kind of physically based model of like what an event is. Mm-hmm. So the idea that an event could happen and then its afterlife becomes more important, more significant, sustained, it dies and then it comes back to life. I mean, that's I think in some ways a fundamentally different, I mean, it's been true of cultural history and to some limited degree always, but it becomes more actively and more significantly present, I think, in contemporary cultural form. So, I mean, that's why I think that dimension is, in a sense, integral to the very concept of cultural programming.
And then one last question to go back to an earlier conversation. I mean, should there be multiple archives, multiple taxonomies, multiple doorways? I mean, at one point we had years back, a random interface. I mean, to what degree is an archive supposed to have one entrance that you resist or you engage and embrace? Mm-hmm. To what degree are we supposed to multiply interfaces and accesses? To what degree should the interface be a site of play?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's an interesting design and architecture question. I tend to think, as much as I'm intrigued by models that play with the kind of fluid interfaces, that if you think about the archive, your web presence and its archival component as a kind of sustained feature of the institution, that a certain amount of stability is, I think, can be highly productive. So I guess I haven't seen really successful examples of like fluid interfaces, because a really well-designed interface has a certain kind of flexibility and fluidity built into it that allows... I think there's something in my mind as a design choice that's a little bit too in your face about the fluid interface or the random interface that forces upon you that randomness rather than creating a user-centered model where it's the user who actually ends up, in a sense, tuning or scripting the navigational path. So I guess I'm a little on the fence about that question.
It's tricky because insofar as sometimes one undertakes projects that lead one somewhere else.
Yeah.
And as an institution, likewise, we try to be responsive to what we've done, and that leads us somewhere else. The question is, like, to what degree can you anticipate on the taxonomic level already how, to what degree can you anticipate where your projects will take you, and thus how they should be archived?
Yeah, I think that's a real question, but it's a question also for the back end as well as the front end, because if you design the back end in a way that's rigorous enough, you can push into people's experience. It doesn't have to be in your face, but it can be a kind of lateral push that always happens, where they see things they don't expect to see, or where they engage in browsing rather than search word based navigation. So, I mean, I guess what I would, in terms of the architecture of such a website, I would want to somehow have it both ways, to create both a pretty intuitive, legible, linear paths, but with always this kind of friendly pressure of the kind of lateral vision that's picking up other pathways that you might not have intended, but that could produce the fruitful accidental discovery, right? But it seems to me that the more subtle way to architect that is not to do it at the level of the sort of splash page, or
Thank you.
My pleasure.